Morning, the Senate Education Committee will come to order. Today's Thursday, February 19, 2015. Today we have the governor's bill for education, Senate File 811. We have actually had background on this as well, and I do have an amendment, but until we get a quorum, we won't be able to act on that. We invite the department to present an overview. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, do you want to wait until there is a quorum, or would you rather go ahead and begin?
No, we'll proceed now. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. Well, thank you so much for having me here to present the governor's budget bill and to speak to some of the highlights within the bill. And members, thank you for being here and talking about it. We presented in the House yesterday, and I stayed the entire time. I have a cabinet meeting today, but I will stay as long as I possibly can to answer your questions on the bill. I just wanted to highlight some of the important aspects of the bill, and then I'll have Mr. Uni walk you through the bill once we have a quorum so that we can give you the policy components behind, you know, it. But I wanted to share with you some of our thinking around why we made these priorities within the budget itself and the governor's thinking behind our priorities. First is that the governor in 2011, as you know from our last presentation, has for the past 4 years really been working on two key goals. One is closing achievement gaps by 50% by 2017. The other is to get to a graduation rate of 90% for all our students, with no student group being below 85%. So you will see in this budget a strong focus on students who have been academically behind or have been underserved in the past, and so, or have been on waiting lists to get services or access to opportunity. And so in this budget, what we are trying to do is make sure that we are targeting our resources to the students that need it the most, and also building upon the strategies that we've been putting in place the past 4 years in order to get more broader coverage, so to speak, across the entire state systemically, and making change for those kids so that we can see academic success. So the first proposal we have is really to increase our per pupil formula by 1%. The governor has said every year that he's governor, he wants to put more money into public education. He has said no exceptions, no excuses. This has been something that he's delivered on over the past 4 years. He is wanting to be sure that schools have the resources in which to meet the very high expectations that we have set for them around student achievement and student goals for all students within their system. So that means that this is money for turning on the lights, getting them to and from school, and paying our teachers and making sure that they can do the business of schools. So that's a 1% increase over the next 2 years of the biennia. Then, as we've been for the past 4 years, we see a very strong focus on early learning. The reason that we are expanding our early learning is because for the first time in our nation's history, over 50% of the students going to our nation's public schools are students in poverty. In Minnesota, that number is about 38%. We know that that number continues to rise for our children in our public schools. The research is very clear that by time a school has about 40% of students concentrated of poverty in the school, all students within the school feel that impact and feel the negative impact. And there are broad challenges across the board in the school once it gets to a certain poverty level. Because we believe strongly that we have to address whole school change and really address achievement gaps on a broader scale systemically, we are proposing that we begin to scale within our public school system 4-year-old preschool. This is because if we wait too long, it will be very expensive for us to try to backtrack and build it later. So that's why you see our proposal a bit different than the Senate proposal, in that we're scaling the effort for our schools, mostly for schools that are ready or already using their school readiness money for preschool programs, to give them some relief, because those have been basically targeted programs for their schools that are in poverty. For instance, in District 196, they have preschool now in five schools, not all of their schools. They've targeted it to their high-poverty schools. And we think that's what most school districts will do that have more than one elementary school. They'll begin to start in the schools that need it the most, and where they can use other resources that come with poverty, such as Title I resources, compensatory funding, funding for integration aid, because we can use that funding now after our reforms for preschool. So it's a really important effort to begin to try to scale preschool, so that by the next couple of biennia, hopefully our state will be in a really good place in order to offer preschool for every single student, either through a scholarship, through child care assistance program with DHS, or in our public schools, or public Head Start. So that then brings me to Head Start waitlist. As you know, these are our poorest families. We have approximately 2,500 four-year-olds who are currently on a waitlist and do not have access to Head Start services, but yet they qualify. So we have proposed to eliminate the current Head Start waitlist so that those children are no longer waiting for Head Start. In our scholarship program, we've proposed some reforms to our scholarship program. If we are able to do four-year-old programming and eliminate the Head Start wait list, we believe that with our scholarship program, we then could get rid of the Pathway 2 option within the scholarship program and expand those scholarships, because the research also shows the earlier you can go, the better for students. And so expand those birth to five scholarships and make them available earlier for children. That essentially doubles the number of private family scholarships available when you pull out the Pathway 2 option, because we obviously would be replacing the Pathway 2s with the four-year-old option. We also are continuing to promote and support our NAS program, the Northside Achievement Zone, and our Promise Neighborhood in St. Paul. We believe that those are showing some early promising results, and it's a community-based program that connects families and communities and streamlines services for children at the earliest ages. And so we believe that this is a positive, and so we've dedicated funding for NAS. As far as the goals and the setting and our seven-point plan, we also have prioritized, since 2011, bipartisan agreement. Senator Jen Olson was working with the governor strategically in 2011 to really push forward some third-grade literacy initiatives. We are continuing that base funding moving forward and adding additional support to our Reading Corps partnership in our proposal. Reading Corps has recently released some evaluative data that shows that at the early grades, especially preschool, kindergarten, and first grade, they're seeing tremendous and significant results for children in terms of attaining grade level proficiencies. And so we want to continue our efforts with our third grade reading. Senator Johnson knows that the governor is very committed to food security for our children and families. And in schools, we made some really good inroads with school lunch and providing school lunch for our reduced price students in the 2013 session. And we now want to expand school breakfast to students preschool through third grade. It doesn't seem like a very important factor, and some people argue that kids come already eating breakfast, but I can tell you that a lot of our children don't, and they miss the breakfast, and this is a really important piece of children not having to worry about a sore tummy and going to the nurse and missing school class time, but really being able to focus on their learning because they have a full tummy. This is at the early grades. It was interesting when we met with the Bemidji folks who were down here just the other today, they were talking about the high school second chance breakfast that they give and how 80% of their students in high school are now taking the breakfast because this is their second chance breakfast to be able to have. So we're just really thrilled to be able to propose this and hope that you will give it some consideration. Other provisions within the budget are our English language learners. As you know, we wanted to move from 5 to 7 years in our request a few years ago. We moved from 5 to 6 years. The research shows that it takes 7 years to master English and support students in that, especially to students who want to take even more rigorous coursework. So even students who may be showing a greater proficiency, if they move into taking rigorous concurrent enrollment type of classwork, AP classes, IB classes, or technical ed classes, they will need support in order to do that and navigate those more rigorous options for our EL kids. And so we're recommending that our English language learners also have the opportunity to get that support for 7 years. We also have a strong focus on Indian education this year, and recently I've been meeting with the tribal leaders to come with recommendations. I think you'll be hearing some of those recommendations next week. I'm so passionate about this because our Indian children really are underachieving at alarming rates, and it's time that we step up and do something about it. You may have read recent articles about our BIE schools, which are federally supported, but barely federally supported. So we will be hopefully bringing some options to you to look at and for your consideration to make a difference in those BIE schools as well. But we just have to do something about the state of Indian education in the state of Minnesota. It's just unacceptable. We also have positive behavior interventions for students who struggle with behavior in our classrooms. Everybody has heard stories about the student who is acting out or having difficulty in the classroom, and then the disproportionate suspensions that happen for children of color within our schools. We want to provide support to schools. We have recent data to show that schools that are doing a program called Positive Behavior Intervention Systems are seeing significant decreases, up to 25-30% decreases in their suspensions, which when students are feeling connected to their school, when teachers are feeling supported in the classroom around discipline issues, everybody learns better. And so we think that if we can expand this to 600 more schools, that would be a really positive change for many of our schools. The final thing that I'd like to talk to is just about supporting some of our students who are, our teachers and students who are in schools that have been persistently underperforming. I know that you've heard from the Regional Centers of Excellence staff who have been talking about our core work that we've been doing in schools. This isn't the kind of professional development for teachers where they come to St. Paul and, you know, we give them a lecture and then they go back and they don't know what to do. This is the kind of support that is actual coaching on the site level, doing needs assessment, looking at their data, and helping walk them through strategies that have worked for other schools that we are seeing in our reward and celebration schools. It's not where we tell them what to do. It's where they own the work themselves, they figure it out themselves, and we help them implement the work of their choosing. So we are really proud of our regional centers. We want to expand them further out into the rural areas. All of our centers are out in the rural areas right now. Minneapolis and St. Paul do not get support from our regional centers. But we have expanded those and want to take it even deeper in providing even further supports to all of Minnesota schools that are having difficulty and struggling. So I think I've covered, there's one other small component in the preschool program in that it's helped me grow, which is a referral network for parents to provide support to parents. And to help them get networked when their children are having some difficulties or showing some difficulties so that we then can try to minimize student referral to special education later on in life. So those are the key aspects. There may be one or two other things. I don't have my list right in front of me, but we'll walk through the bill with you now, and I'll let Mr. Uni talk to you, walk you through the bill, and then I'll stick around for questions.
Okay, and Commissioner, we may take a couple of introductory questions as well. Senator Saxog?
Yes, Commissioner. I appreciate the fact that that you're putting some emphasis on the Indian schools. You know, we had that kind of crisis situation, as you say, with the federal school, the Bug School up in,
yes,
in the Cass Lake area. The good news, I think, is that, and certainly the additional funding will help, is that there are surrounding schools in that area, Cass Lake, Deer River, Grand Rapids, and Bemidji, that have all done a pretty good job. That's not a bad way to put it. They've seen significant improvement in their reading scores and achievements. So I think we have ways to go, but we're making progress.
Senator Wieger, Senator Sassog, I really do want to, and I think maybe the MREA may have presented some of the data on the Indian Ed concentration. Of the 17 largest rural districts with the greatest poverty, 15 of those 17 have high concentrations of Native American students as well. And it's the Rural Association that did that analysis, and this is a top issue for them because they are seeing that their schools are very much struggling and unable to improve overall for the entire population because we don't have the right resources in order to make a difference for this specific population and the relevant learning that needs to happen. So I'm hoping that next week will be illuminating for the committee to hear some of what's going on in the state of Indian education in Minnesota, and we'll bring some recommendations for this body to consider.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, I appreciate your recognition about the behavioral issues that you're addressing. And I know that you are aware that breakfast is part of that intervention. I know that you are probably more informed than I am on the issue of vision, but I am very much aware of the lack of attention to vision that our schools are giving. Not that they're not trying, but it's a very difficult issue. And I'm told that one in four children have vision problems in school. And then another data that I have a citation for is 7 out of 10 juvenile delinquents have vision problems. And I believe that there is likely a very strong correlation. I wonder if you'd comment about vision.
Commissioner.
Yeah, Senator Wieger, Senator Johnson. It does go undetected for quite a while. I actually just had to get my son glasses, and he's gone to all of his well-child visits and everything. And, you know, his teacher asked him, you know, are you seeing the board? And he said, you know, basically said, no, I'm not seeing the board. And he's been to all of his doctor visits. So it was interesting to see that, and, you know, but it could have just progressed now to where he's older and his vision hasn't gotten. But it is really important. I remember when I was a small child at Pratt Elementary School, we had vision tests, we had hearing tests at school, and I think I was even tested for something called scoliosis. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe some of you are old enough to remember those days, but they did these testings and screenings in schools much more frequently in the early 70s than they are doing now. And I think that there's a benefit to that, and for families to know and understand these screenings. We do some preschool screenings for children that are of a health nature. And I know in Ed Ellinger's health bill, we have some home visiting, and that would contain some of these early screenings for families. So I think it's extremely important to do screenings and to try to understand what are the actual barriers that are happening for children. Another thing that goes undetected quite often is dyslexia for children, and it's many, many years before we understand and know why children are struggling with their reading. The Help Me Grow proposal that we have is one way to network parents and help parents understand and get the services that they need for children early.
Thank you.
Thank you. And, you know, on those subjects, on February 25, we will have hearings on eye exam, Senator Johnson's bill, and so, you know, official comments then regarding that. And as well, Senator Chamberlain has proposals on dyslexia, and we'll be getting the Indian Education Work Group.
Senator Wieger, Senator Johnson, just one other brief comment, too, is that over the years when we saw so many cuts in our schools, we also saw cuts in school nurses. And I think that, you know, we don't have a proposal to fix that today, but I do think that it's something for discussion to talk about our school nurses and some of our elementary schools. We have half-time nurses who come every other day, or the dispensing of medicines, I think, is problematic when it's not by a trained nurse. And I think that's something that we really need to start looking at within our schools.
Thank you. Any additional questions, comments for the commissioner before we delve into the bill? And I'll note we're too shy of a quorum, and then we'll put on the author's amendment, which you do have, and Senator Johnson will assume the chair. But that said, you can incorporate by reference any comments you make you know, for the author's amendment, which everyone has and will be adopted. So please proceed, Mr. Yuni.
Mr. Chair, Senators, my name is Ado Shuni. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Education. And first and foremost, I'd like to apologize for the header on this walkthrough. It says HF 811, and that's no slight. It was supposed to be SF 811. So just for the record, I'd like to apologize for that. So this is SF 811, the governor's pre-K through 12 budget bill. In Article 1, General Education, Section 1 establishes for the pre-kindergarten program proposal that the school calendar year must include 850 hours of instruction for those students, and during the summer, at least 200 hours of instruction, and that would be effective with the effective date for the program of 2017, or the fiscal year 2017.
Excuse me, members, we'll field any questions, comments after each article. Okay, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 2 adjusts the per pupil allowance for alternative teacher compensation, or QCOMP program, in future years due to the impact of the universal pre-K program. That's it'll stay at $260 per pupil through fiscal year 17, and then the program starts. Then $251 per pupil in fiscal year 18, $249 in fiscal year 19 and thereafter. Section 3 is the pre-kindergarten program proposal. It's a four-year-old universal pre-kindergarten program, voluntary for districts to offer. For districts to meet the state requirements, they have to have 14 components covering areas like high-quality instruction and alignment of curriculum, assessments and instruction, aligned with state standards and guidelines, measurement of children's skills, child-staff ratios, comparable teacher salaries, community collaboration and parent engagement, coordination with programs and services for all student populations, and inclusion of children with disabilities, and a plan for mixed delivery that may include partnerships with outside providers, also complying with the state requirements. Implementation strategy must be included in the district's world's best workforce plan. Districts receiving pre-kindergarten funds must have ramp up of teacher licensure or teachers with special permission. So that's 25% with licensure in the appropriate area or special permission by the beginning year in fiscal year 17, 50% by fiscal year 18, 75% in 19, and 100% by 2020 and thereafter. To participate, the child must not be in kindergarten and be 4 years old on September 1st of that school year, and must have completed early childhood screening within 45 days of enrollment, and must show documentation of the required immunizations. Section 4 speaks to English language learners. clarifies that the English learner would include pre-kindergarten proposal or pre-kindergarten pupils, and that would be effective fiscal year 17. And it increases the years a pupil can generate English learner revenue from 6 years to 7 years, and that would be effective in fiscal year 16. Section 5 is the pupil unit statute, and it would be updated to reflect students in the state-compliant pre-kindergarten programs that they would generate 0.5 pupil units. Section 6, this is the formula allowance increase. It's $58 increase in fiscal year 16 from $5,831 to $5,889, and by another $59 in fiscal year 17 to $5,948. Section 7 is a technical change. It's increasing the state share of operating capital revenue and lowering the operating capital levy to offset increases in other levies resulting from some of the governor's recommendations, primarily the pre-K proposal, and so that this would just be a no levy impact under the governor's proposal. And then Section 8 is the final section of Article 1. It's the appropriation changes. Over the biennium, the general funding increase of the allowance, formula allowance would be $174 million, $109 million over the biennium for pre-kindergarten. That's $3 million in the first year and $106 in the second year, and just under $8 million for EL services going to 7 years and LEAP's implementation. And the appropriations would also include increases to non-public aid and non-public pupil transportation linked to the formula increase. And that would be the end of Article 1, Mr. Chair.
Question, Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Commissioner, and for coming in this morning. I just have some feedback to provide for you, maybe for Article 1. And I'm very supportive of the initiatives in Article 1, and at some point, I hope that we can get there. Some of the feedback that I've received from administrators and so forth is, we just did all-day kindergarten last session, and very proud of that. And I'm hearing more and more that we need more than 1% on the formula, that maybe it's 2 and 2 or something. And maybe we push back the universal pre-K initiatives while schools kind of figure out the facilities and get the all-day kindergarten up and running. Personally, I'd like to do both right now, and I know that we don't have targets, and that's going to be very expensive, but I'm hearing a lot of people say, yes, we like universal pre-K, but we really need more on the formula. So as we put our budget together here, as we get input from the House and Senate, and as you have meetings like this, I hope you're probably hearing as well that what's going to be the good balance for our long-term objectives going forward. So that's just kind of my 2 cents worth.
Quorum present.
Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just like to echo Senator Dahl's comments. We're very heavy on early childhood education, which difficult to dispute that. There's no question that's something that's needed. At the same time, the formula allowance increase would help in the middle school, high school areas as well, because we know that those same students that we're assisting in the early years are going to need assistance as they move through the E-12 system. So I just like to reaffirm and support Senator Dahl's comments. And then on Section 7, I do have a question about lowering the operating capital levy. Do you have specifics on that, about what you're looking at, a percentage dollar amount?
Excuse me. Madam Chair, as Dr. Melcher approaches, I want to also make reference to the author's amendment, which actually I'll offer right now because it does address this section, Senator Clausen.
Okay, so that's A150047.
Yes, it's an author's amendment. Madam Chair, I move the author's amendment.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Amendment adopted.
Okay. They gave it as opposed. Okay. But on that question,
Mr. Melcher, to the question.
Madam Chair and Senator Clausen, Article 1, Section 7 is increasing the operating capital levy equalization factor by the amount that's necessary to offset the levy increases that are associated with the other aspects of the governor's bill. Primarily, the pre-kindergarten proposal is adding pupil units into the system, and as a result of that, school referendum levies would go up, the Safe Schools levy would go up, the integration levy would go up. And essentially what we've done is just said, well, how much does it take in terms of some additional levy equalization for the operating capital levy, which gets spread pretty evenly across all districts in the state, in order to neutralize the impact so that on a state total basis we have a zero net levy change. And we've got the equalizing factors in law in that would be going in law. It would be going up to $19,500 the first year, $20,400, and then $21,000. It's just kind of backing into the level that we would need to maintain the property tax total for schools at the current law level.
Thank you.
Senator Clausen, that finishes your question.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Senator Pratt and Wicklin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Rooney or Commissioner, when we heard universal pre-K in this committee, we were looking at tales of more than $580 million per biennium. The governor's budget has it at about $377 million, which leaves us about $204 million short of what the fiscal note said. And I guess my question is, how do you explain that difference in the tails for that item,
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, thanks for the question. We are scaling it, so we anticipate for the first year about 50% of schools would opt in, and then I think we go to 65% and then 75%. Tom would know for a fact how we predicted, but we are scaling each of the years of the biennium and more and more schools, up to 80% of schools. We don't think that all schools will offer pre-K because we also in the pre-K package allow schools to take their funding and contract for educational services with a local Head Start or a local child care provider who is parent aware rated. So, for instance, a smaller school district like Climax or a smaller district like Aiken, they may take their funding for their fewer students and contract for services. School boards right now can contract for educational services and enter into agreements. They would then just follow their protocols locally to decide how to use their pre-K dollars to prepare. We think this is important, and many schools, districts will engage in preschool and want to receive the funding because they have world's best workforce goals around preschool readiness. And I think that they'll want to begin to think about how do they ensure that their children are ready for kindergarten in the community.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Is there, through the world's best workforce or any other mechanism in this proposal, is there a local contribution?
I'll let Tom answer the question.
Madam Chair and Senator Pratt, I think one of the important differences to note between the governor's recommendation and I believe it was Senate File 6 that was introduced earlier in the session with regard to the universal pre-K is that I think the Senate file was weighting the students at a 1.0 weight. It did not fund the linkages, for example, compensatory and other formulas. The difference in the governor's budget is that he's weighting the pre-kindergarten students at 0.5, but he is providing a linkage so that compensatory revenue would go up, referendum revenue would go up, all of the other things that are linked. So I think that contributes to that difference where the dollars in the governor's budget are less than the dollars would be if you had the 1.0 weight, and there is some expected local match in the calculation.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So how much? So it sounds like the local match is going to be about half a student because we, you know, most people don't take child care for a half a day; they take it for a full day. Is that
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, we actually in our policy require a full-day program and are requiring summer programming as well. I think it's 200 hours in the summer and then the minimum of 850 hours during the year. So that's part of the policy. I do want to share that school districts, with the difference with the Senate file and the governor's proposal with the pre-K, like Dr. Melcher said, it is a 0.5 match. However, school districts currently are providing pre-K and using either referenda dollars or a fee, which we would not allow them to use a fee. For instance, District 196 charges $130 for 2 days, $170 for 3 day care, which is about $3,000 to $3,600 per year if they were to offer it. If you look at the preschool runs that you have here in front of you, you would see the breakdown, how much each district would get per enrolled student if they were to do this. Because of the dollars that flow, I think also there were some concerns about targeting and that we should target the funds to the kids that need it most. Using District 196 as an example, they also target at certain schools that are higher poverty than other schools because those students generate the linked funding that Dr. Melcher was talking about, compensatory Title I integration funding. Those are the types of additional funding that would help them cover their costs. That's why this first year we're saying about 50% of schools would opt in. Other schools who were doing all-day kindergarten, and then we provided the 50% additional funding for the all-day kindergarten, they have gone into creating early learning centers, and many of them are offering preschool programs with their school readiness money now.
One more, Senator Pratt.
Thank you.
On to Senator Wicklund.
Oh, I thought I got to dominate the conversation. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just wanted to kind of close out by saying it's important that this committee realize the governor's proposal puts a mandate on our local school districts to cover the excess cost if they decide to implement this program, and that it basically eats up the minimal increase in formula funding that's been proposed and that Senator Dahl and Senator Claussen both mentioned. So it seems to be a cost containment measure, and I think Senator Hoffman's SF6 fiscal note was probably more accurate in what the true cost of this program is going to be to Minnesota families. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering, in Section 3, where you talk about the kind of the ramp-up of licensed teachers in the preschool, you start out with the requirement that 25% of the teachers are licensed with early childhood, and then it kind of goes up over several years. Have you done any studies or research on availability of early childhood licensed teachers, and do you think that there's going to be is it sufficient? Does it seem like there will be sufficient numbers? Will there be a lot of special permissions need to be granted? I don't know. Kind of what are your thoughts on that?
Commissioner Casilius.
Madam Chair, Senator Wicklund. I'm going to ask Bobby Burnham to speak because she's been working with our licensing division on those studies.
Ms. Burnham. Good morning.
Ms. Burnham.
Madam Chair, Senators, we are in the process of doing some research with our Minute and our licensing department. We currently have just over 6,000 active early childhood licensed teachers, and that's licensed in early childhood special ed, parent ed, and early childhood. About 3,830 of those teachers are currently employed, so we're taking a deeper dive into that data to see, you know, we do know that there is potentially some challenges with workforce development, and that's being addressed through some of the projects with our Race to the Top grant. And so as soon as we have more data, like per district or per region, we will share that.
Thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer, did you have another question, Senator Wicklund?
No.
Madam Chair, Senator Wicklund, I do want to just say, overall, in general, Minnesota has a teacher shortage. And I think that that's another issue that we need to really I can travel anywhere in rural Minnesota and not hear from superintendents about how difficult it is to find teachers today. And it's a very complex problem. One is affordability for college and the many years that teachers go through. One is our licensing and the many different fees and costs to become a teacher and the licensing.
Yes.
Some is the testing. Some is just that teachers, it's a more competitive market for them now to go into a different profession than teaching. But I do think, and I know that Senator Torres-Ray is very interested in, is that there is work needed in terms of teacher preparation, recruitment, and trying to get the build our supply in Minnesota.
And members, you remember our great meeting that we had last week, and it struck me when the superintendent said this is urgent.
Yeah, it is.
It wasn't just a problem, but the word urgent struck me, right. I know. Senator Wicklund.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. I would appreciate it if we could see some of that data when you get further along with that, and then I'd be interested in knowing, you know, kind of what your strategies are for the early childhood areas, especially looking at, you know, how are we going to recruit more people into that workforce? Are we going to look at existing child care providers and training them and moving them up into school-based settings? Or are we going to look at, you know, having elementary teachers moving into the pre-K world? So I'd be interested in more information about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little bit puzzled here by this proposal because as we've listened to testimony, we've heard about from our school superintendents, the school facilities work group, there's nothing in here that takes care of that or approaches anything whatsoever that I can see here. We've heard from our school superintendents and others that talk about the formula, and yet this proposal actually eats up the 1%, and so it's almost a go backwards. And then they've asked for mandate relief. We have teacher issues, and this bill will worsen those teacher issues, all right, because it's going to drive another shortage. And so, and yet the solutions for the issues of teachers and the graduation rates, third grade reading are absent. And so I've never gone around anywhere that I've heard much of a call for pre-K. It's like it's a good thing, we talk about it, but Mr. Chair, we have a lot of pre-K going on in our local school districts. This would take away some of the school readiness money, which the school districts are using very efficiently and effectively. So I'm just a bit puzzled as to this whole proposal, and yet from what we hear from the actual people, the school boards, the teachers, the superintendents, this is not it. And sadly, it consumes the resources that could be better used elsewhere. So I'm just kind of puzzled as to another 12 FTEs added to the Department of Education when we have a possible issues with our teachers where and hiring and training and education. So I'm just a bit puzzled by all that. And can you maybe talk about where the proposal is going here, but more importantly, why are some of these other things not being addressed in the governor's proposals? I'm just puzzled.
Commissioner Casillas.
Madam Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, I'm sure that I have somewhat of a bit of a disagreement with the importance of the proposal and the priorities and how we've laid them out. I think at the last time I presented to the committee, I was discussing this and responding to Senator Pratt about trying to really put a focus on the students who have been underserved prior with the Indian education focus, the focus on our EL kids, the focus on students struggling with behavior. These are the things that superintendents have said they have had trouble with for a long time, and they need new strategies. Doing the same thing is not working for them. The evidence is so clear about preschool. Even Florida is looking at mandating four-year-old preschool right now. They've been offering it optionally for many, many years. And so I think that, you know, it's not a trend. It's a necessity to start early with children, especially with the growing poverty. And we think it's wise to scale it. We think that districts are in a position to offer preschool. At least 50% of them are in a position to offer preschool. I've looked at their fund balances. I was sharing this with the House yesterday because I was concerned. Since 2009, school districts are in a healthier position with their fund balance across the state. Some of them over 30%. We have 177 school districts and charters that have over a 30% fund balance. They could absorb some of these costs in order to do the preschool programming that they want to do, especially for a small number of kids within small districts. Now, I caution, you know, you don't use fund balances for willy-nilly, but to have a 30% fund balance is a pretty healthy fund balance for many of our school districts, and we'd be glad to get you that information so that you could see it. And I also want to stress that we do have money in the bill for third grade reading. We have valued that 2011 law that we put in place, and we are seeing huge results with our fourth graders now moving from 24th in the nation, I believe, to 10th in the nation. And so we are seeing gap closure at our fourth grade reading because of the reading investments we put in place, and that's, I believe, somewhere around $50 million each year. And then we are increasing our partnership with the Reading Corps, which has been a tremendous opportunity to give more of our struggling students reading tutors in schools, and principals and superintendents across the state have told me this has been invaluable and wonderful resource for them. So we are listening. Now, yes, they do want more money on the per pupil. They have told me that. And I'm not certain if this body will bring recommendations for that, or the House will bring recommendations. Right now, the governor is saying 1%. Obviously, he has said this is a starting place to have discussions about everything. And I must say, Senator Kiffmeyer, that I, too, am really concerned about the facilities. We've put in a lot of effort, Dr. Melcher, for the past several years looking at facilities and working with superintendents and trying to create equity around our facilities. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to continue to have further dialogue about the facilities. It's a big chunk of funding. I think the state came forward with, was it $245 million? For the facilities, that is scalable, so there are some things that we could do to scale that and get at least get the work started, maybe with deferred maintenance. But I think that these are the priorities that we set right now as a starting place, and I'm looking forward to continuing the discussion with everyone in this body.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I don't really have a question. I do have a comment. I sometimes am, and I guess I shouldn't be since this is my third year here, but I am sometimes continually amazed at what hundreds of millions of dollars cannot buy. And I think that in this particular budget, what we have seen is an abject failure of addressing the basic needs that our school districts have. And we are putting, as Senator Pratt said, placing additional mandates on them for the future. We are not addressing the needs that they have. I have superintendents telling me, please tell me that this budget is dead on arrival up here, because they said it does not accomplish the things that we needed to accomplish, and rather it creates additional problems for the future. And as we look at the tails that this budget really does not address appropriately, it increases our inability to meet the needs of education in the years ahead. And disappointment is, Madam Commissioner, is my first description of this budget.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. If there are no more questions, we can continue.
Article 2.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Article 2 is Education Excellence. You look at Section 1, it establishes priority placement of reading corps members, so the teachers, in pre-kindergarten through first grade programs in focus for priority schools or federal school improvement grant recipients. Section 2 is the appropriation changes. It's $4.522 million increase to the base for the Success for the Future program over the biennium and $10 million increase to the Reading Corps over the biennium. There's also an increase to charter school building lease aid and achievement and integration aid due to linkage with the pre-kindergarten proposal.
Any questions, members, on Article 2? If not, we can go on to Article 3.
Article 3, Special Education. Section 1 is a technical fix from an unintended change from 2014. The word excluding got dropped inadvertently last year when changes that were in two separate bills were passed and combined and amended this section. The items after where excluding is inserted are components of general education revenue, for example, operating capital, that have long been excluded in calculating special ed excess cost aid, except local option revenue, which is new and replaced part of referendum. The language as written before this this bill change would double count these revenues instead of including them, or excluding them, pardon me. Section 2 is the appropriation changes. There's minor savings in special education funds, $4.6 million increase to base for positive behavioral interventions and supports, that's the PBIS program, over the biennium. And that's the end of Article 3, Madam Chair.
Questions? Go on with Article 4, Mr. Uney, please.
Madam Chair, Article 4, Facilities and Technology. Section 1 is the appropriation changes. There's minor increase to deferred maintenance equalization, which is linked to the pre-kindergarten proposal. Madam Chair, Article 5, Nutrition and Accounting. Section 1 fully pays for the school breakfast for program for those in pre-kindergarten through grade 3, and reimbursement can only happen for claims submitted no later than 60 days following the last day of the full month covered by the claim. Section 2 and 3 remove statutory references to school readiness aid. Section 4, the appropriation changes. It's an increase to school lunch and food storage linked with the pre-kindergarten proposal. $28.1 million increase to the base to school breakfast for fully funding students in pre-kindergarten through grade 3.
Questions, members? Article 6, libraries.
Madam Chair, Article 6, libraries.
No changes.
No changes.
Okay. Yes. How about Article 7?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Article 7, early childhood education. Section 1, districts no longer have to submit copies of contracts, or not have to, but don't submit contracts of copies of contracts with outside early childhood providers to the commissioner. That's linked with the pre-kindergarten proposal. Section 2 changes the kindergarten readiness assessment so that MDE provides districts with a menu of measurement instruments that are aligned to state early childhood indicators of progress and kindergarten standards based on the kindergarten readiness study and meeting the world's best workforce goals of measuring school readiness. Section 3 expands eligibility of early learning scholarships to ages 0 to 5 from the current 3 and 4-year-olds. Recipients must not be enrolled in a state-funded pre-kindergarten program, and that's effective fiscal year 17. Section 4, Parts 1 and 2, establishes the Help Me Grow program under MDE in collaboration with the Department of Health and Department of Human Services, and this is affiliated with the national program. It's a resource and referral system for children prenatal through 8 and their families. Program facilitates collaboration, providing healthcare outreach, tools for identifying developmental and behavioral problems, and access to community-based services. The program will provide community outreach and a resource directory, including medical care providers, early education, early childhood education and care programs, assessments, mental health services, family supports, public health services, and other information. The program will be a centralized resource of information for parents and professionals, and the program will collect data to understand the ongoing system, identify gaps and barriers to service, and MDE will annually review the outcomes, alignment with early childhood goals, and impacts on young children. And Section 5 is the appropriations changes for the article. It eliminates funding for the school readiness program in fiscal year 17, which shifts it to the pre-kindergarten program. An increase to early childhood and family education is linked to the formula allowance increase. There's $19.44 million beginning in fiscal year 17 to eliminate the Head Start waiting list, and $2 million each to Northside Achievement Zone and St. Paul Promise Neighborhood over the biennium. And that concludes Article 7.
Any questions on Article 7, please? If not, Article 8. Oh, Senator Hoffman, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for highlighting the various breakdowns. I guess I do have some questions regarding how they envision, like, the education parent partnerships, or I know the St. Paul Promise Neighborhood, the ask there is like $20 million, and I see that there's, you know, 1.2 and 1.2 to those both. But one of the things that keeps coming up is the evaluation process, and how do we know that we're tracking the youth that are coming to the school districts from various programs throughout the system, whether it be a scholarship program or a private child care center. And I had thought, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Madam Chair or Commissioner, that we were going to assign MARS numbers or some types of the ability to track a youth when they're entering our pre-K system, and then to see the validation as we're moving the benchmarks up through elementary school. And I need some clarification on that. And if we're not doing that, I'd like to know why not. And if we are doing that, then it'll lead me to some follow-up questions, which, Commissioner, I'll just connect with you after this. But does that... Am I missing something here? Or?
No, Senator Hoffman, I was waiting to see if Commissioner Casilius would like to respond, or if she'd like to have Ms.
Burnham.
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, we are in the process of, one, developing a kindergarten assessment, which would, it's not like your standardized testing that we give to older children, so
good.
It wouldn't be like a fill-in-the-bubble thing. They're observational. But we're developing that would be consistent. With that, we would be able to know if a child went to a center-based care, came from private care, or was in a school-based care, or was a Head Start student. With that, we'll be evaluating and looking at how well those different settings perform and prepare students. So that's future information once we have this kindergarten assessment, and that's part of our proposal, is to develop this kindergarten assessment. In terms of the other question that you had, I'm going to let MARS Bobby speak to that, because it's more technical in nature around a MARS numbering and how we're tracking students through our computer systems.
Ms. Burnham.
So, Madam Chair, Senators, we, as you know, when you get screened, you are assigned a MARS number. So if you receive a scholarship, one of the requirements is to be screened. We also have our piloting early education student data system, where we're working with Head Starts to assign them student identifiers. So we're really working hard to make sure all the kids coming through our early learning system do have a student identifier. So when it comes time where they do take the kindergarten measurement at the beginning of kindergarten, we know their history and the quality of program they came through and some baseline data.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. And a follow-up, Madam Chair and Commissioner and Director, Doctor, or whatever. Burnham, right? Did I get that right? Bobby,
yeah.
Burnham. I've heard from superintendents that, because in looking at the effectiveness of our preschool programs, school readiness, and you're right, Senator Kiffmeyer, school readiness is a super duper fantabulous program. My own 18-year-old daughter got to hang out in the Champlain Park High School school readiness program, and 18 years ago, and she still rolls her eyes at me. So I mean, she's pretty normal. So even though normal is a cycle on a washing machine, but the superintendents will tell me that they can unequivocally tell you when a child enters into the public school system, the effectiveness of their preschool programs. And I got to tell you, they're rock solid. I mean, I served 8 years on a school board, 3 years on the federal level, and I'm looking at the youth in my area, 90% of them, and the superintendents will tell me, I can tell you where these kiddos went to. But they can't give me that same type of measurable accuracy if the youth haven't come through the system. And so that lead me to this question, and it sounds like you're in the process of discovering or talking. So that leads to the next question, which is if we can't talk about the effectiveness of outside programs, then that really should have us thinking about where our dollars should go so that at the end of the day we know our return on investment is data-driven and research-driven. So I guess it's more of a statement than a question, but I would like to just follow up sometime in the near future just about how that process is working, because it's all got to integrate together,
Commissioner Casilius.
Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, thank you for your comments. I think the only thing that I would add is that when we have programs within our schools, they are fully accountable as well. By the world's best workforce, they're accountable. They're accountable under federal measures, and they're accountable under state measures. And under our licensing divisions for having licensed teachers, and they're also through our parent aware and highly qualified parent aware system as well.
No more questions. We'll go on to Article 8, which has no changes, and Article 9. So unless someone wants to ask questions about those two articles and their appropriations, we'll go to Article 10.
Madam Chair, Senators, Article 10 is the state agency appropriations. Section 1 is the appropriations to the Department of Education. It's $818,000 operating adjustment, $6 million increase to the regional centers of excellence over the biennium, $2 million to the Help Me Go program over the biennium, $200,000 increase to the Board of Teaching, $9,000 operating adjustment to the Board of School Administrators. Section 2 is the appropriations for the Minnesota State Academies, $546,000 operating adjustment. Section 3 are the appropriations to the Purpich Center for Arts Education. That's $299,000 operating adjustment and $1 million for facility and instructional improvements over the biennium. That concludes Article 10, Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. I'm glad to see Purpich for the Arts is in here. Madam Chair, and maybe Commissioner, you could help clarify. I heard a statement as Purpich, the Center for the Arts, was talking about the need for increased money because they're not a charter school. They were created by us. A comment was made that kind of, first they didn't believe it, but now you're here, I might as well ask the question. They said they're unable to collect third-party payment and unable to collect money for services provided in special education. And the third party would be if they're doing medically related services. And the second statement is that they're, under the provisions of FAPE, if you're providing a level of special education services, it absolutely made zero sense to me. And do you know if that's true?
Commissioner Casilius.
Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, Purpich brought this concern to me a few years ago, talking about special education, and because they're a state agency, there's certain different requirements for how to collect that special education funding. Tom, can you speak to it? They're an independent agency, so we don't manage their fiscal
public school.
Dr. Melcher.
Books. So.
Madam Chair and Senator Hoffman, I'm not a real expert on this topic, but I believe that the situation is that when you have a state agency, Purpich, or for example, the Faribault Academies, that there's an expectation that the agency budget will pay for the operations of the entity. And so I don't believe that Purpich or the Faribault Academies qualify for the special education aid that we pay to school districts in the same way that a school district would. I know in the case of the Faribault Academies, we have an exception built into law where we pay for the one-on-one paraprofessionals that the school has. But, it's kind of a question of what's the proper role of the agency budget versus the state aid that normally would flow out to local school districts, and how do you meld those two together? And when we created the budget for PERPICH, or the created the state appropriation for the agency budget, to what extent was that already including some money for, you know, an expectation that they were going to serve some students with special needs? So I think we need to work out how those two fit together.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That just makes it more confusing. And, you know, there's nobody in the world that understands financing better than you for years. So my question then comes back to if the youth is not considered a child who has a right to FAPE under 94-142 or now 101, whatever it is, then they aren't then considered a student in the access of how law determines a full-time equivalent or a one pupil unit. That's just as confusing as heck to me, because that child still has rights under the provision of the Rehab Act, Section 504. That child still should have rights to, in the district, the local education agency still has an obligation to identify, assess, and evaluate every child with a disability in their school district. So to me, if there needs to be a state fix on this, then we need to do it, because if they're providing third-party services that should be billable under medical assistance, and Commissioner just pointed out that almost 50% of our kids now going to school are definitely in poverty. That's what we're banking on, really. So to me, it's a missed opportunity for us to be not only providing the service, but also being able to bill not only under FAPE, but also under third-party billing. So I'm just...
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, you're bringing up a really good point, and I'm sure Sue Mackart has more details than either Dr. Melcher or myself have about this issue. But I think it's a decision about whether you want they come forward with their operating budget, making projections, just like every other superintendent makes projections around enrollment and number of special ed kids, and then they come to this body and ask for whatever appropriations they need to cover FAPE and to cover their expenses operationally and academic. And this body gives them whatever it is that they're requesting, and they're making their case, and then there's decisions about what they have, and then that's what they need to cover their FAPE and to cover everything. So if a student is on an IEP and it requires a one-to-one and they don't have the operational budget in which to do it, they have to find it from other costs and make cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's every superintendent also has to do that within the budgets in which they're constrained and have, because when you have special education students and on an IEP, it says this is the services that they need. You must provide those services, and I think that's why we see superintendents saying we need additional money on the per pupil because of the cross subsidy for the cost of special education. And, you know, because no matter what, they are required to cover those first. And then that comes from all of the rest of the general ed funding. So this body could decide to make PERPICH a school district. It is not considered a public school district. It is a state agency. And then their dollars would be less confusing and flow like all the rest of the school districts within the state. But currently, they are a state agency, and they work from an operating budget like any other state agency would to provide services to students in their case.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Commissioner Casillas. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's worth looking into, especially to do a compare contrast. And I don't want to get into a cross-subsidy discussion, but I do want to come back to a potential liability of child find, and if it's the obligation to identify, assess, and evaluate, and if perhaps a child isn't getting that due to the constraint that we put on because we classified as a state agency, then it would make a logical sense to look into putting it into a public school as a district by itself, and that would probably open up some more avenues for funding streams. So thank you for that bit of information, and thank you, Madam Chair. I'll stand.
Thank you for bringing that up. Are there any other questions, members? Senator Stump.
Senator Wicklund had a
question. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. Senator Wicklund first. Go ahead.
Okay. Are we doing kind of open, Madam Chair, open questions on the whole?
Sure. Yes.
I wanted to go back, just thinking about the preschool proposal. And so if we're saying that the pupil unit will be a half unit, it'll be about you know, roughly $3,000 then per year.
Well,
if you,
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Wicklund, we have the preschool runs for you. If you could pull that out, you can see. I'm not sure.
I guess I'd like to break it down, Madam Chair, in terms of a per student.
Yes, that's broken down per student. So they range somewhere from about, I'm just looking at the first page, 3,600 to 4,700.
I'm sorry, which document?
Dr. Melcher, did you have a comment?
Madam Chair and Senator Wicklund, there are two runs. One of them says fiscal year 2016 at the top, and the other says 2017, and you want the 2017 one? And the column that the commissioner is referring to is the second column from the right, showing the dollar amount per student that would be generated by students in the pre-K program. So you're right. The basic formula is a little under $6,000. So the 0.5 weight would generate about $3,000 of basic revenue. And then the reason that these numbers are a little bit higher than that is we have other components of general education revenue. There's operating capital money. There are a variety of other categories of revenue that school districts generate. These numbers are a little low the first year because compensatory revenue is based on a prior year student count. So this does not include the compensatory revenue in the second year of the program. That would be going up. But those are the dollar numbers that would be available to the districts in the first year of the program.
Senator Wicklund.
Madam Chair, I look at, for example, if I look at one of my districts, Bloomington, in the 2017, then what I see is like a $4,500 per student. Mm-hmm. And I guess just a comment, going back to what Senator Pratt raised in terms of gaps and in terms of funding, to run a full-day program, I know that they're spending closer to $5,000 on a half-day, and a full-day program is really not going to be covered by $4,700 or $4,500. Do you think it's realistic for districts to take up this program with all the commitments that are entailed? I mean, there's a lot of commitments that they have to make to implement it with your guidelines if there's such a significant gap between, you know, funding a full-day program and what's going to be provided.
Commissioner Casilius.
Madam Chair, Senator Wicklund, I know Les Fujitaki very well, and he was the financial manager in the district before, and he has a 25% fund balance, and I'm sure he could figure out how to do it. He's very much into preschool in your district. They have a huge focus on preschool, especially for EL kids, which is commendable. And I think that much like kindergarten, we had districts where we were funding kindergarten at 0.5, and they figured it out. How to give all day kindergarten to 50% of our schools figured it out how to give it all day, and those districts I think are also able now to expand into pre-K, and so I think it's very similar to our kindergarten effort, and it will take many years before we will get to a 1.0 all day kindergarten. But I think what we'll see, because of the increasing poverty and the need to meet these very aggressive goals of all of our children graduating on time and being ready and not having to take remedial education, I do believe we're going to begin to see the demand from the public that we have this four-year-old pre-kindergarten program in our public schools.
Senator Wicklund.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, just a comment. I think that perhaps you can see a 25% fund balance. I'm not sure that I am aware of that. I do know that Bloomington is going through a budget cutting process right now this year and making some cuts that are going to be impacting the students there. So to say that they can find, you know, the money to make up, a $3,000-$4,000 gap, you know, to provide a full day program is per student is difficult, and you know, given the only the 1% increase on the formula, I think that's only going to get harder as inflation raises their costs. So just a comment on that.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First off, I just want to thank you, Commissioner, for making some bold decisions in your proposal here. The one that you were just talking about, the pre-K program, I think if we could project ourselves out maybe 5 years or even 10 years, I think we would be pointing back to when we initiate a program like that for a number of reasons. But I think primarily the benefactors will be our children who get an early start and can benefit from the quality programs. The other one that I want to thank you for is the alternative compensation component. And obviously it's been many years that we've tried to even that out across all districts so that all districts could participate. And thank you for making that decision, because as districts are going to be required in 2015 to start evaluating their teachers, this is going to be something that they can point to.
14.
Yeah, right.
Madam Chair, Senator Stump.
Commissioner.
I think I maybe need to clarify what we're doing with the Q-Comp. So we don't have recommendations and to equalize it so everybody can get it and bring down the cost. This would be a much larger cost item if we did do that. What this does is adjust for the enrollment of our preschool going in because there's a cap on Q-Comp. So because we've reached the limit on Q-Comp at $75 million for state aid, there is no additional resources for new districts to enter into the Q-Comp program because there's a cap on that at $75 million. Therefore, when you increase preschool per pupil units and they generate Q-Comp funding, that then would bring us over the cap. And we have to account for that additional dollars over the cap. So then we bring that down by prorating it and bringing down everybody else who's currently in the program, bring down their allocation to account for their increased enrollment.
Well, then I take back what I said.
I'm so sorry. You could remove the cap, and then we don't have a problem, Senator. But that would come with a cost.
I was not that bold.
Madam Chair and committee members, we've got a lot more work to do than we thought we had. I do have one point that I wanted to, and actually it may be directed to Dr. Melcher. When we see a proposal, and this happens in all committees, I think, why do we not see the current year's funding? Versus right now, we'll see the next 2 years of the biennium. And it seems, at least for myself, it seems like it would be more helpful to kind of have the current year's funding and then the next 2 years of the biennium.
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Senator Stump, we certainly have that data, and we'd be happy to provide that. And I believe we also share that information with Senate staff. I think usually during the legislative session, we are focused on what the increase is as a result of the bill. So all of the runs we have are showing what the net change would be from the governor's recommendations. But I know quite often there's also an interest in knowing, well, how much did we get for the current year, and what's going to change for the year to year? And I know that's the way school districts look as they budget. So we'd be happy to provide that information or work with Senate staff to make sure they have the data that's necessary to provide that other type of comparison.
Chair Wieger assures us that we will get that in the near future. Senator Torres-Ray and then Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I have a question about the Help Me Grow provision that you have in your bill. I am curious about how this Is this a new program, and how is this going to be integrated into what already exists? I know we have the resource and referral. I don't know how much money goes into that. I think that's in DHS. I don't know, but very, you know, I had a meeting with a couple of nonprofit organizations that provide resource and referral for child care. They have been very frustrated with the lack of resources that is going to child care in some of the areas that they serve. And it seems that there is an abundance of services to provide referral to services that do not exist. And so I'm curious as to, I would like to have an inventory of the different county, city, school district, and state referral programs. And I don't know how, if you could help me with that, if you could help me understand. Mm-hmm. I understand that this is, you know, an intent to kind of bring parts together, but ultimately the intent is to provide referral to parents, I presume, because that's the intent for everything, that everybody gets their act together so that parents understand what we do. But it seems like there is a lot out there, and I would like to know if you could help me understand with the Commissioner of Health and Human Services, why do we have so many referral programs, and what are they? I think that, Madam Chair, I would like, Mr. Chair, I would like to ask that we do a review of resource and referral programming that exists out there. So I'm just curious because I'm a little frustrated with that as well.
Members, if you want to look in there, your bill, it's on page 22, Article 7, Section 4. And Commissioner Casilius, would you like to respond, or Ms. Burnham?
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, thank you for bringing that up. I don't claim to be an expert on all of DHS's referral systems, but it's certainly a good point. We do want to make it easier. I think that's part of the Promise Neighborhoods program, is that we make it one place for them to go to get services and coordinate services. And so we're doing some experiments with that model. I know that also in our health department, they have the SHIP program, and that's looking at how do you coordinate services and make it more easily accessible for families. And so I'll let Ms. Burnham speak to kind of our proposal for the Help Me Grow piece, but I do think that that's worthy work and trying to coordinate that effort, and we can try to do that.
Thank Ms. Burnham.
Madam Chair, Senator, that you bring up very valid points, and I think the intent behind transitioning to this national Help Me Grow model is to consolidate many of those various resource and referral systems. So this is a cross-agency effort. So it's in partnership through an interagency agreement with Health and Human Services. Currently, there are three or four multi-stakeholder work groups going on to plan the implementation of this transition to Help Me Grow. But I can certainly go to the lead of this particular project and ask, relay some of your questions and get some data for you. But that is the intent behind this model, is to consolidate many of those services. So there's just one place to go for parents and families to get the services they need.
And Ms. Burnham, you will provide that to the committee when you're ready to?
I'll try to get that as soon as I can.
Thank you. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up, you know, we have become very digital, and we do access information via phone. And there's a tendency to think that, you know, low-income people really don't have access. Just to give you a sense, immigrant low-income people are one of the use their phone and have a phone because they don't have access to a local phone at home.
Yeah.
They tend to have wireless phones more than any other community because they can travel with that phone and that number. So we could do a tremendous service by really bringing all of these resources together and putting online information that is easy to use in multiple languages, rather than having agencies that people don't even know they exist. So I am very appreciative of this effort, and I hope that
What this means is that we are going to do more efficient, better work, not additional work, because mm-hmm. we need to bring the resources that are there in order to bring online and web resources and, you know, apps that can help people access this information.
Ms. Burnham, do you wish to respond?
So, Madam Chair, Senator, thank you. Again, the purpose of this program is to have a centralized access point for all these different programs. So we are definitely working toward that.
Thank you. And then Senator Jensen, did I see her? No? Okay. Any other questions? Senator Kiffmeyer and then Senator Pratt.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. In other committees, we've had like a budget book. I'm familiar with HHS and transportation, and so I would think that we also have a budget book, because some of my questions I would usually go to the budget book because it explains what they are and so on. So, Mr. Chair, is that available for us other
Mr.
than just
Arneson?
A bill?
Or Mr. Wilms?
Yes. Yes, we'll ask our fiscal analyst. There are books available. I think there was copies being made, but we'll get an update on.
The request was for a budget book mm-hmm. for the division.
Madam Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, the department produced, or sorry, Senate Council Research Fiscal Analysis post tracking online. So we track, you know, spending that's in the proposal, and those are available online, and I can send out the link. But the agency, MMB, prepares the governor's budget proposal, and those are available at MMB. I don't think there's physical copies printed, but maybe those can be printed for the committee.
I would very much like that, Mr. Chair, and I have them. Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry. I would really appreciate that. And online is great, but there are times when we need to make notes and do things, and I really use them heavily, and I think others do. So if we could have those, that would be great.
I would venture to guess that, yes, we will make them available in print, paper print. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know that I necessarily have a question as much as an observation. I share Senator Weber's thoughts on being disappointed with this budget. We're increasing, we're increasing 3.4% over this biennium in new spending, and yet the department's allocation goes up 33%, goes up a third. And we're expecting efficiencies from MnDOT. To help us with some of these, and it seems like every time we add a new program, we have to add some additional administrative fat to the budget. And so, I would hope and expect that when this comes back to the committee, that we'd see some more efficiencies out of the Department of Education.
Any other comments? And I think the chair. Oh, Senator Nenow.
Thank you. My colleagues have been fairly measured, but I'm not going to exercise the same restraint. I'm just going to say, really? Seriously? Come on. We can do way better than this. We're spending hundreds of millions of dollars more in this proposal, and we do 1% on the base. If anyone around this table wants to step up and defend that, I will sit back. I will not reply. Go ahead and defend it. And tell me why I'm wrong in my criticism. Mr. Chair, if this is what comes out of this committee, I will be more than disappointed. We can do so much better. We can. We all know it. Put partisanship aside, we all know we can do better than this. We've heard bipartisan concern across this table here today. We can be smarter, we can be better, we can spend better. I hope this is not what moves from this committee up to the floor of the Senate, because this is subpar. And you all know I am more than willing to be partisan when I need to be, and I'm more than willing to work
across the aisle when it makes sense, and this makes sense. This is not about blue versus red. This is about smart versus not. And this right here is not.
Senator, you know, each of us is entitled to their opinion. We all have certificates, and I'll leave it at that. We have a number of proposals in here that have strong bipartisan support, and the elements of early learning have various components that we'll further discuss. Particular programs, you know, we have had hearings on as to the amount of formula increase. Once we get the revised the budget forecast and any potential supplemental message, that'll provide further instruction, and I think all of these concepts are in the mix in terms of the priorities, but I would just respectfully say that each of us is entitled to their opinion, and we'll engage once we roll out the bill in terms of our formal debate on these points.
Members, since Chair Wieger has given me the gavel, and even though I offered to give it back to him, I go back to the opening statement from Commissioner Caselius, and Senator Nenow, and I think most of us around the table are saying, yes, we want to close that achievement gap, and yes, we want to see 90% graduation. 100% is what we really want. But 90% is realistic. It is something that we could do. It's how do we get there? So I don't know if anyone disagrees with me that these are two very important goals that we have as a committee and as an education commissioner and so forth. And then how do we get there? That's the argument, and we'll be having that argument in the next 2 months. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I had also a question about the education excellence proposal that I'm very excited in and want to figure out if there is a way we can partner with you to kind of work with the regions to get some teacher input. I hear both parts of the value of the Centers for Excellence and the value of having the regional support. I have been particularly involved in conversations with ELL teachers. And while we have districts like my own district where there's a lot of ELL teachers and high volume of students, we also have districts that have very small populations and very, maybe one teacher, if any, ELL teacher. So they have very different needs about training and support. And it seems to me that partnering districts and trying to figure out how do we kind of build on the assets that some districts have and opportunities with others that really don't have that may create an opportunity for these centers to have. And I know that you are doing, you know, trainings and summits and all of that. And I don't know if you have done a little mapping of certain populations. I'm speaking predominantly for ELL just because they are so different. The regions are so different for ELL students. But I presume that for children with disabilities and others is very similar. And I would like to hear your comments as to what opportunities are there for us to partner with each other, to work with you in terms of, you know, senators and representatives that represent different areas, and involve teachers in this process, because I think they want to be partners in this process, and some feel that they are, but many feel that they are kind of outside of the process.
Commissioner Caselius.
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, this is an area that I'm quite passionate about, with engaging teachers right where they are on site, doing the work, coaching them. And that's why we're coming with a bigger ask around the regional center, so that we can connect our reward schools and our celebration schools and the excellence that they're seeing, and closing gaps with our schools that have large achievement gaps or have large EL populations, or maybe are still struggling with inclusion of special ed kids and how to do that right, so that they can get better results for their kids. So the Regional Centers of Excellence has been just a really tremendous effort of teachers. These are teacher, they don't even have an office really that's in the back of their trunk because they're going out to school. So they're expert teachers and educators within the school systems themselves and within the region who have trusting and good relationships with the teachers right there in that community. And they're building capacity, and then they get together and they build capacity on what they know, and then they share that again and cross-pollinate that across the entire state. It's really just a tremendous model. It's really based on a model that was called the MEEP model years ago that educators loved and used to share best practices across schools. So we're looking forward to continuing to expand that. We'll work with anyone on that effort, and if there's ways that we can have you visit our schools and get into our schools, we're happy to help with that as well. So hold town hall meetings and talk with folks. Anything. We're open. We are just anxious to get at that goal, those goals that we have. And I'm also very excited to hear your ideas. So I know that there's been some critique of the items that we've brought forward. And if you have ideas that you would like to consider and discuss, obviously you will be discussing them throughout the session until May 22nd. I'm happy to be open. My staff is open to provide any research and evidence-based information for you on any of your ideas. So just, you know, call on us, and we're willing to come and work at it. Like the governor said, this is a starting place. And we're just happy to discuss anything to see what we think we can do best for our children moving forward.
Thank you. Senator Wiegand.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank the commissioner and staff for their testimony, for the bold initiatives that have been offered. As noted earlier, we'll continue to discuss these over the upcoming weeks. And there's a number of points where we ask that we get follow-up that'll be done, that'll be shared with committee members. If there's additional questions that you have, you know, let us know or ask the department as well. And several of these items have bills that have already been heard, and I'll note on a bipartisan basis, and we'll continue with a very active committee schedule over the next several weeks. So I would ask that we lay Senate File 811 as amended on the table for possible inclusion.
So moved by Senator Wiegand. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried.
And members, that completes today's meeting. We have several bills that are listed for next week. There could be some modification or two, and we're looking at putting in a number of bills over the next 3 weeks that I have requests for. I've been able to accommodate every request that's been made so far, and we're looking at putting in, I believe, through about mid-March. We should be able to announce that by next week, remaining requests. However, beyond that, for new introductions after next week, it's going to become increasingly difficult unless we look at meeting in the evenings. And you know, we can do that if necessary. And so I would re-invite each of you, if you want to discuss any particular item, give me a call, or let's sit down and talk further as we look at within a month, actually, less than a month, of putting together our policy omnibus bill. So any additional comments or questions at this point? Okay, and we do have a letter here that was distributed. It was from students regarding the online college and the high school proposal, and so that's here and made a part of the record as well. And just as I believe Senator Housley, when we had students that weren't able to make it, that had their testimony, and we have some from students as well that were in Alexandria the day of the hearing. So there being no further business, the committee is adjourned.